This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
Airports that know our faces, streets that count cars, pedestrians, and near misses between the two, trash bins that know they're full and can even smell what's inside.
When we look at cities and what they're going to look like in the future, I think that any type of city service that you think about, whether it's water systems, streets, police departments, fire departments, all of them are getting more connected.
Cities are embracing internet-connected gadgets just like the rest of us, and it's producing tons of data about everything from trees in your neighborhood to your daily commute.
It's really about fundamentally what is the role of data and technology in our cities across the country, and you can't hold back. So that means everything from embracing open data legislation to really understanding the nuts and bolts of how technology can unleash improved services in city and local government.
But should we embrace these connected cities or be more skeptical?
We think it's important for the public to be aware of what's going on and for the public to have a voice, to have a say in how this technology is deployed. Cities and towns are making decisions about adopting surveillance technology without really making sure that the public is informed and bought into that.
The more we connect our cities, the more open they become to cyber attacks.
So when you look at smart cities and the potential for attack, you know, the first is a city can be hit with ransomware. And what that means is all of the data is encrypted and potentially the systems get locked up. And now all of a sudden that city can't provide their day-to-day services to the community.
This episode, we look at cities covered in sensors connected to the internet and we ask, are they smart, hackable, or cities of surveillance?
The future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
This is our motion loft sensor deployment. You can
see Las Vegas may be known for its sparkling lights and stacks of casino chips, but it's also getting a reputation as one of the nation's leading smart cities.
This actually shows a three-dimensional map of Las Vegas. These are live pictures and live information.
Michael Sherwood is the city's director of innovation and technology. In a lab outside his office, we're standing in front of a giant touchscreen that looks like something from a TV news set. And he's pinching and zooming in on cars and streets.
I can pick this vehicle had a traction control problem, meaning that its tires weren't grabbing on the road. So that can tell us that a pothole's possibly forming or they have bald tires. With data analytics, we're able to analyze and determine what the answer might be. But I can click on this vehicle and you can see it takes me there, shows me the identification of the vehicle, just like somebody would have Wi-Fi in their pocket, tells me how fast they were going, the type of the alert, and the date and the time. So again, this is all real-time 3D capabilities.
Sherwood says this type of tech helps them better understand traffic patterns and potential safety hazards. It's also just the tip of the iceberg.
So this is a streetlight of the future, we call it. So it has a camera, you can see right here, and then it has these interchangeable bulbs. The thing about the light is that we're able to reconfigure it on the fly. So if we want to add another camera, we just would unscrew this and screw the camera module in, and now we would have two cameras and one light. Some of the other interesting things that this can do is that when the streetlight is on at night, we can look for actual motion and put the light down to 25% power. And when it sees a jogger or someone walking on a trail, it can go back up to 100%.
Cities can also include something called ShotSpotter, which has audio sensors that hear gunshots and notify the police. Smart city devices are relatively new, and it boggles the mind just how many things can already be added to a seemingly simple light pole.
So not only does it have this unique set of camera systems, it has Wi-Fi, so we can put out free Wi-Fi. It also has a PA. So when the park is closed, and if you go into the park, the camera will see you, and it can play a pre-recorded greeting based on analytics that we program into it. It could flash the light red to let you know that, hey, get your attention.
The city also has an autonomous shuttle for public transportation. Sherwood says the same sensors that communicate with self-driving vehicles can also help out drivers, telling them, for example, how long before a light will turn green, and...
This is our trash can. So we have a sensor that sits up underneath this dome that detects if the trash is empty or full. It also detects the smell. So sometimes the trash can may not be full, but it smells really bad. So in this case, if it smells bad, our sensor picks it up and lets somebody know, go ahead and change it out.
We head outside to see these gadgets in action, though summertime in Nevada means it's 110 degrees. As we walk over to one of the oldest casinos in Las Vegas, called the Golden Nugget, we pass one of the trash cans.
We're trying to get to a point with technology where we're only servicing the trash cans when they actually need to be cleaned versus just going there every day.
Presumably working toward a day when automation takes care of that too.
Definitely. Yeah, I would like to see as a technologist, someone that's interested in technology and loves technology and is passionate about it, where you wouldn't need any human intervention at all, where the trash can would alert an autonomous vehicle, it would drive over, empty it, and then go to the dump at the end of the day and not only do that, but sort the trash into recyclables, composting, and then garbage.
We reach a street corner, but just miss the light. As we wait our turn to cross in the intense desert sun, Sherwood says in future, these lights will see there aren't many cars around and let us cross.
It would know that pedestrians were here waiting, and so it would go ahead and preemptively change the light, knowing that there's no impact to traffic if the light changed. So even though you push the button, the lights are still on a timer-based system. So we'd like to eventually change that so that it's automated and that where intersections are working together to make the traffic flow.
This city is filled with innovations meant to improve quality of life or public safety, but these systems also need protection. Each and every time we introduce software or connectivity, we also introduce risk, including a risk all this information will land in unwanted hands, or that all this data we're collecting will have consequences for privacy.
Have you had any pushback?
You know, not too much. The community at large is pretty receptive to this.
So you haven't had like the kind of pushback folks who are worried about maybe surveillance with all these sensors everywhere?
What we do, everything's anonymized, so we're not doing things that are unique to an individual. We're not doing, you know, the buzzwords of the day, facial recognition and things like that. We're not really working in those areas.
Facial recognition technology is starting to be used everywhere from airports and police departments to IDing guests at the royal wedding. You can learn a surprising amount from somebody's face. But regardless of what type of tech cities use, they need to protect that data from cyber attacks. And one company working with Las Vegas and others is called DarkTrace. It uses AI to watch for inconsistencies in a network. Nicole Egan is the chief executive.
The city of Las Vegas had very grand initiatives. They wanted to help use artificial intelligence and sensors in the water supply. They wanted to extend it into traffic to improve air quality control. They installed sensors in the sidewalks to actually help provide safety. They tied sensors into their emergency response systems. But with all of these projects, it actually expands the potential attack surface.
As Las Vegas gets smarter and smarter, the cyber vulnerabilities become bigger and bigger, and perhaps in ways we can't even imagine. She gives an example from one of the city's biggest industries.
We were deployed in a casino, and inside the casino, there was a high-tech fish tank. And one of the high-tech devices in the fish tank was an Internet of Things connected thermostat.
Turns out the casino's IT team didn't even know a smart thermostat was in the fish tank.
Well, the attackers scanned the network, found this unsecure thermostat, actually used it to get a foothold in the network. Then they scanned the network looking for the High Roller's database. They were successful. They found a piece of the High Roller database and tried to pull the file back across the network, and their intention was to upload it to a cloud. Now, in this particular case, the fish tank installer forgot to tell the IT team or the security team that this was going to have an Internet of Things Wi-Fi device on it. The second thing is no one thought to write a rule that says that the thermostat can't have access to the High Roller database. But in the case of artificial intelligence, it just saw this as unusual. The fish tank had never tried to scan the network before and had never moved a large amount of data before. So DarkTrace's AI was able to catch it and stop it in its tracks.
Many organizations, including cities, get attracted by technology, and security is often an afterthought.
The Wall Street Journal's Adam Janofsky covers cybersecurity for WSJ Pro.
And you only realize that you bought the software, you bought the device, and you didn't really think about how you're going to secure it until after a breach has happened and after your wastewater system has been shut down or citizen data has been leaked.
And these software breaches have happened before.
My favorite example was that an Australian man was sent to prison for a couple of years for hacking into an Australian waste management system. He caused more than 250,000 gallons of raw sewage to spill into local parks, rivers, even like a Hyatt Regency hotel that was nearby. This was almost 20 years ago, and it's not a new problem for cities. And I think that over the past few years, we've seen instances like these just continue to increase.
Several U.S. cities were hacked just this year. Computer systems for the city of Atlanta were hit by ransomware, a type of malicious software that can block access to a network unless a ransom is paid. Atlanta's police and municipal court system lost sensitive data, and the city's online billing portal was completely shut down. The hackers asked for $50,000 in Bitcoin to restore the network back to normal. The city refused. Instead, it's paying out millions of dollars to cover the cost of rebuilding its digital infrastructure.
And it was basically just some lines of code that traveled through a computer system. In the same month, Baltimore's 911 dispatch system was hacked and had to be temporarily shut down.
Back in Las Vegas, I meet up with Daniel Crowley, a research director for IBM who happens to be in town for a security conference. He shows me just how easily some smart city sensors can be compromised.
So we've got a dam simulator here built into an aquarium with a little pump to simulate water flowing out from this river with a little riverbank and road next to it.
He found the code for this system just by searching around online.
Now, because we can corrupt the data, we can cause flooding to occur, or we can go the other way and cause the dam to close up completely. But what we're going to do here is feed bad sensor data to say the water level is drastically low. And we should see, in response, the dam gate open up completely and start spilling water into the river very quickly and then start flooding over onto the riverbanks and onto the road and everything.
Yeah, that's what I'm watching happen. How hard was this?
Acquiring the code was a little bit of a trick, but once we actually had the code to analyze, I found the vulnerabilities that allowed me to do this in a couple of minutes. The devices that we've looked at are any indication of the security of smart city technology in general. The state of this security of smart cities is pretty poor.
You could paralyze yourself into worrying about something that may or may not happen and miss advancement. But we have to move forward.
John Jennings is the city manager of Portland, Maine. It's working on all kinds of tech initiatives, including those multi-purpose light poles we heard about earlier. He says the energy-saving bulbs could save taxpayers over $1 million a year in utility costs.
But at the same time, it gives us functionality to add more things to that light pole. So, for instance, sensors. We have not done a good job of capturing environmental data that will inform us as to what it's like to live in the city of Portland. So noise, air quality, it's the enhancement of the opportunity of that fixed asset.
Portland also started using artificial intelligence to help understand traffic. Those sensors take pictures of cars, pedestrians, and bicyclists. Image analysis software counts everything and records the speed. The city is also preparing for driverless cars, meaning speed limits, crosswalks, school zones, and stop signs will all be digitized. But in Maine, there is some pushback from people who worry the sensors could lead to new forms of surveillance.
These companies collecting all this data about the movement of our cars and maybe linking that to our license plates, maybe linking that license plate information to other information about our movements, that's incredibly intrusive. This is Zach Hayden, legal director at the ACLU of Maine.
He says Portland's new sensors could undermine the public's ability to move freely without being followed, as is the case in China. The government uses a network of cameras, voice pattern, and facial recognition to put a score on its citizens. It can even track how many sheets of toilet paper people take from public restrooms. So the ACLU of Maine filed a Freedom of Access Act with the city of Portland to learn more.
One of the things that we learned was that in the marketing material from the private companies that have pitched this technology to the city, they're quite explicit about the kind of surveillance capabilities that come along with these LED streetlights. They could have cameras attached to them that could monitor people's movements. They could have audio recording capabilities.
He says smart initiatives have the power to be positive, but citizens should be aware of how this can be a tool for surveillance as well.
Remember how it feels when you're driving down the road and there's a police car driving behind you. Maybe you're not doing anything wrong. You know that that police car is watching you, is following you. You grip the wheel a little tighter. You sit up a little more stiffly. That's what it feels like to be under surveillance. And that's not how we want to live our lives.
There's always going to be some people who are worried about more, quote, surveillance or Big Brother or concerned about cameras on every street corner.
John Jennings again with the city of Portland. When asked about how these new streetlights help the city, he told us Portland police cars come equipped with sensors that control their brightness when helping someone or pulling over a driver. But he said it's not so much about surveillance as it is about safety.
To be honest with you, that's not anything that we're really looking to do in Portland. We don't have a lot of crime issues.
The thing about privacy is, once it's gone, it's very hard to get it back.
Zach Hayden again with Maine ACLU.
Privacy isn't something that goes away all at once, right? It's a steady erosion, whether it's our privacy in our communications or our movements or what we're doing on our private property and our private homes. It's not something that happens just in one day or one court decision. It's something that gets chipped away at.
So if you're having a hard time understanding what a smart city is, then join the club, because that is the case all across the world.
Neil Kleinman teaches urban planning and public service at NYU.
Right now, there's probably a conversation going on between an agency commissioner, a deputy mayor, and the chief executive, in which the chief executive comes in and throws a software platform and pamphlet on the table and says, God damn it, we're going to be a smart city starting tomorrow. Make it happen. And that's when the confusion sets in, because there is no clarity on what a smart city is anywhere. This is something that has not fully come together in terms of a new government operating model. We're mucking around trying to make sense of how it is we can use things like the Internet of Things and sensor technology.
I think that with a lot of American cities, they're really slow to change, actually. Every now and then, a survey comes out about which organizations are most likely to adopt new technologies. Cities are always at the very bottom of the list.
Again, the Wall Street Journal's Adam Janofsky.
I think Dubai is probably one of the best examples of a city that is sort of just kind of constructed out of nowhere. They have their own cybersecurity strategy in place. They intend to implement blockchain technology across all government services in the next few years so that city transactions, visa applications, renewing a license plate number, all of that kind of stuff is going to have layers of pretty complex security in place. Cities are taking advantage of the technologies that are coming out, and it has new risks, but also a lot of new potential.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Garrett Crow and Kristen Schwab, with help from Adam Janofsky and Stephen Rosenbusch. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.